try to get to some more clarity on what we've tried to figure out so far. So essentially, we were trying to address a few questions that really were interlocked. And some of them, two of them could be answered with one answer. Sometimes an answer is just going to address one of it. But there's definitely a lot of connectivity between the two points. So we know that a katan, theoretically, at least under the right circumstances, is kasher teshecht. We know that an akum, the Mishnah is pretty clear, is not kasher teshecht. Why is that? So we saw that the Rambam is unique. The Rambam sees it as an active soul of a concern of the karasa v'achalta mizivcho. But other Rishonim, Tosfos and the Rosh, and maybe they're getting this from the Tosefta, understand it as a deficiency, that there is a din of bar zvicha. The Rishonim have that phrase, but it seems like the Tosefta is getting at the same kind of thing. So the idea that you're missing something, that you're not qualified to be a shochet, is an interesting one. Because the question is, if a katan is qualified, so he is a bar zvicha, so why is it that an akum is not a bar zvicha? None of them are, neither of them are technically chayev and mitzvahs. And the question was strengthened by the fact that when it comes to tefillin, so we see that there is quite a connection there, that tefillin requires a bar kshira, and a katan is excluded from that. A katan is not considered to be a bar kshira, so it's possible we can answer both those questions at once, but why is it that a katan is considered a bar zvicha for shchita, and an akum isn't, and the katan is not considered qualified for shira, for creating tefillin? So, yes, sir.
Where do we know that a katan is a bar zvicha in the first place?
So, the Rambam will tell you that we don't know it. And some who say, you can find this in a number of achronim, going back to the Beis Halevi, that the reason the Rambam has his own Torah by Akum is because he thinks katan is the proof that there is no din of bar zvicha. Because if a katan can shecht, so it must be there's no rule of bar zvicha. And therefore, Akum must have a different issue. It's a pretty significant point, so it's interesting just how, if it's really just something that emerges from being forced into a corner, because otherwise, the Rambam can't explain why a katan works and an akum doesn't. It's a powerful point. You may have seen, some of you I know are makbid only to look at the makar the way it says in the Mara Komos, and that to realize that the numbers, you know, sometimes have changed to fool you. But if you see the Rambam in Hilchas Avasat Tumah, so you see that there he writes also related to his shita here, just to get this in, that the tuma that comes with a animal that was shechted by an akum, he thinks that tuma might be drabanan. And that's, that tuma might be drabanan. Do we have a rabbi here? Actually, sorry? I'll read to you. I think I can access it quickly on the phone, but if a rabbi here is better. The language of the Rambam in Avosat Tumah, in some editions, is called Shar Avosat Tumah, but it's Perek Beis Halacha Yud. So his language is Shchitas Akum Nevela Umatamba Mamasa. Right. So Shchitas Akum is no good for eating, and it's also Tame. V'afil Yisrael Amar Al Gabav. It doesn't help if a Jew is standing on top of him. You know, okay. Da da da. Skipping a line now. V'karuv Be'enai Sh'af Zeh Midivrei Sofrim. I'm close to saying the Rambam says that this may be a din derabanan.
The tumah of a
shchitas akum specifically. Sharei tumas avodah zarah, the tumas tigrosah midivrehem, because the tumah that's going to come out of an avodah zarah and the cruise avodah zarah is only midirabanan. I'm skipping around again. So maybe you'll say, "Aye, but it's clear that it's asur manatora to eat it." Lo kol asur bachila matame. Not everything that is prohibited to eat conveys tuma. Sure, treifa asura, but tahara. Treifa doesn't automatically make it tame. Okay, so again, that's an excerpt. That's some of the words of the Rambam there, and the Ravid attacks him. Pretty intense language. Ravid says, even for the Ravid, he says, Omer Avram, Zohi Achas Misvarosa, this is one of his crazy svaras, putting in the word crazy, but it's essentially where he's going. Ein b'kulam b'chusam mizu. No, nothing worse than this. Ki ovdei kachavim, heim kibahem is out. Ovdei kachavim, the status is essentially like a kof. It's not going to have any status at all. So essentially, the Ravid's point, leaving out the rest of his language, but you can look at it itself, the Ravid's point essentially is that there isn't any shechita here. So there's no shechita, so then it is an avela, so it's subject to tuma. What's the Rambam coming from? So this is the Rambam l'shitaso, his unique shita, that you see that the shechita of an akum theoretically is a shechita, but the Torah prohibited it because of the concern of being pulled into his idolatry. But maybe on some level it does have an impact. So
does that connect to the Dalet Yabez and Shneach Lashuta, where it says, Gather Kadoka?
So there it's an interesting question, because it's a very interesting question, because there, so there's a reference to a Gather, going beyond the Ikur HaDin, or the part of the Din that is logical, to suggest that there was a fence. So, what was the context there? There, the Rambam's talking about the fact that in Ovid Avodah Zarah, we're worried that he's going to come and pull you into his meal. So, we discussed that part. Even that part, it sounds like it's also maybe not Meikur Hadin, because maybe we're saying that the meal is not the problem, the Avodah Zarah is the problem. But that certainly seems like it's a Dimon HaTorah. We spent a few minutes at that time discussing whether it's similar to an asmachta, that you see a certain concept in Minhag Torah, where the Maharal understood it, that you see a certain concept in Minhag Torah, and Chazal were coming off of that statement. But it's presumably that's a Minhag Torah, even according to the Rambam, that Minhag Torah, the Torah is telling you, you should not get too close to the Akum, because maybe he'll invite you over to eat from his shechita, and you see from there his shechita is also. Hi.
Two questions on the Rambam.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have that concept a lot, that there's a sea of Min HaTorah?
So that's what I want to talk about, but let's assume that that is not yet it. The next line might be it.
Okay.
Right.
But then, and if we assume that, if he's calling the, if he's saying the Ra'as or the Shlita from the Nakam is Din Derabanan,
mm-hmm.
then, I mean, he totally brings the Pasuk and help Shlita. So we have to...
But the Pasuk is the Pasuk is on the Shlita itself. So the question is, should we say, as the Yossi brought up originally, should we say that it's limited to actual idolaters? If you have a Ger Tosha, if you have a non-Jew who's not an idolater, so maybe we should say this shouldn't apply. So that is brought up by the next line of the Rambam, when he says, "Begeder gadol gadru," that it's a geder, apparently, that even if this individual is not an idolater, we're still going to prohibit his shechita. So there is some discussion, does he mean to say that's Drabanan, because he talks about it together? Or is he saying that's still a part of the Din Min HaTorah, but the logic of the Din is together? So that, more your question a second ago.
Is it an asmachta or is it Din Deraisa?
So that's where there's a little bit of ambiguity. That line is not an asmachta. That line, he's saying he assumes that this applies even to a non-idolatrous
non-Jew. Shai Avos HaTumah is saying that it's Derabanan.
Right, he's just carved Bainai to say it's Drabbana. It might be a Drabbana.
Isn't there a conflict between the two halachas?
No, it's two different dinim.
How?
Or three different dinim. The first din is that the shechita of an Oved Avodah Zarah is no good. That is clearly a Din Min HaTorah. Actually, according to everybody, but for different reasons. The next din in Halacha Shechita is that the shechita of a non-Jew, even if he's not an idolater, is also no good. And what the status of that is a little bit ambiguous. Probably the Raisa. Maybe the Rabbanan. The third din, in Avos HaTumah, is that the fact that it's Metame. So the Rambam says about that he thinks that's possibly the Rabbanan. And the Ravid says, what are you talking about? It's the Raisa, because the Shechita was nothing.
Can I repeat the third?
The third din is that the Tuma, when you have an animal that's an Avela, so it's usher to eat, and it's also Matame.
Either by a idolater or not idolater?
So if an animal is a nevela stem. So here, let's assume he's talking about an idolater, just to keep it almost simple. Right, so let's work backwards. What's the Ravid's position? The Ravid's position is it's matamim and idolatry. It's nevela. The shechita was nothing. So the Rambam's position is no. Maybe the shechita wasn't nothing. We're not allowed to eat from the shechita. That much we know from the pasuk. V'achalta mizivcha. That we're worried is going to call and invite you to eat from the shechita. But that's an external concern of Avodah Zarah. So the fact that Torah says you can't eat this shechita because it's Avodah Zarah doesn't have to make it nevela or a tumas nevela.
The fact that you can't eat it is agav the Avodah Zarah.
Right, it's because of the Avodah Zarah, right. So the other Rishonim, the Rambam, the Tosfos, and the Tosefta all sound like the shechita is nothing. And the Ravid here is also the shechita is nothing. So if the shechita is nothing, so it's a nevela, so it's got tumas nevela. But apparently the Rambam doesn't hold that the shechita is nothing. And that the shechita could have been something. But the Torah separately prohibits eating from the shechita because of the Avodah Zarah possibilities. Maury, you sound like you're still concerned about that.
No, just a lot.
So let's go over again. So there's three dinim here. One din is that an Ovid of Avodah Zarah shecht something asur min haTorah to eat. According to the Rambam, because of the Avodah Zarah concerns, according to the other Rishonim, because it's simply not called a shechita, he's not a bar zvicha. The next din is that this applies even to a non-idolatrous non-Jew. So according to the other Rishonim, that's a din min haTorah. He's not a bar zvicha. It's not about whether he practices idolatry or not. He's not a bar zvicha. But according to the Rambam, it's not as obvious. So the Rambam calls it a geder gadol. And that geder gadol might sound like it's a drabbanan, but it's possible and maybe even likely that's still called a din min haTorah. And we'll come back to that point in a second. The third din here is that there's a tumas nevela, that comes with the shechita of a non-Jew. So according to the other Rishonim, Tosfos, and the Rash, and now the Ravid chiming in also, it's tamei min haTorah, because it's no better than an animal that died on its own. The shechita was nothing. It's a normal nevela. But the Rambam says he thinks it might be drabbana. Why? Because this is l'shitaso, that the shechita itself really could be good. But there's an external consideration of Avodah Zarah. So the Torah asked you to eat this otherwise good shechita. So not everything that's asur min haTorah is tameh. And he says, look at a treifa. A treifa is also asur min haTorah, but not necessarily going to be matame if it's shechted. So too, maybe shechitas Avodah Zarah is like a treifa. You're not allowed to eat from it, but it's only an isra achila. Doesn't convey to him. Those are the shechitas.
He's paralleling, making a parallel between shechitas akam and shechitas nevela.
Shechitas akam and treifa.
The shechitas akam and treifa. Right. Shechitas Akum is not
inherently
bad, it's just wrong. Right.
Correct. All we know, and because he ties it to the pasuk, all we know is that the Torah prohibits you to eat shechitas akum. And he gets that from that pasuk in Kisisa of Karasa v'achalta mizivcha. So apparently it's a bad thing. If he invites you to eat from his shechita, you're not allowed to eat from it. So the Torah tells you can't eat the shechita of a non-Jew. But it doesn't mean that it's nothing. So it's like shechting a treifa. You can't eat that either. But it's not matame.
And he would say that shechitas akum is not matame either.
He thinks that it's not matame in
haTorah.
When Midrabanan, they made a tumor for it. Now, to go back to your previous point, is it possible that a din min haTorah is a gzera? That's one of our frequent favorite topics also. This is a... It's a fascinating topic by itself. This is an issue that was made popular by Rav Yosef Engel. Rav Yosef Engel, one of the great Talmudists of 100 years ago, lived in Poland. So in one of his svarim, the Sefer Lekach Tov, in Klal Ches, he has an essay there, poses the question, Imatzinu Siag Min HaTorah. Do you ever find a situation where you have a din, and the nature of the din is that it's a safeguard? And yet, even though we know Chazal makes safeguards, it's Yu Siag LaTorah, but maybe not exclusively. Maybe you have din and HaTorah, which are also there as a safeguard. It's a big chiddush in general, because we tend to think in two categories, that you have dinim and HaTorah, and they're inherent, and they have significance in and of themselves. And the dinim d'rabbanan are protective. But maybe it's not absolute. Maybe you have protective dinim d'raisa also. And whether that has any nafkamina is a good question, but maybe it does. So Rav Yosef Engel has this essay, and he says, well, let me think about it for a minute. And then he rattles off like 25 examples. So there's a lot of possible examples. Most of them are not slam dunks. Most of them is if you hold one way in Rishonim, you hold another way in Rishonim. But according to at least one Rishon in each place, various dinim min HaTorah are really there as a siyak. And it's a fascinating discussion. Happy to talk about it at length in another context, some of the other examples. But certainly the feasibility of such an idea has been well established by Yosef Engel in this essay. Okay, so with that, so what about the katan? How is the katan the bar zvicha? So we saw a couple of different angles, and a number of achronim get involved in this, and they give answers which could answer both questions, so the question of the difference between katan and akum, and the difference between shchita and kshira. I'll answer one or both of them, depending on the nature of the answer. But a lot of the answers have to do with the idea that the katan is still prohibited to eat non-shechted meat. And without getting into all the details, there's quite a lot written about this, but we need to maintain somewhat of a balance. But there's a lot to figure out about this. Is this an Isra Min HaTorah? Is it only applicable to Yisurim? And we mentioned last week a whole lumdus about how that could also explain the Rambam and Tosfos here. Is it Shechita is a mitzvah? I mean, a mitzvah saseh, and then it's not going to apply to Shechita, if you say it like that. But the other Rishonim say it's a lav. So maybe only when you have a lav could you say that it applies to ketanim as well. But is that a din min HaTorah? Is that a din min d'rabbanan? If it's d'rabbanan, so then it's an interesting question. Would you say that a status min d'rabbanan could make his shechita kasher min HaTorah? Is that a workable approach? The Levush, by the way, the Shach quotes the Levush. Levush says, you know what? Katan is not a bar zvicha. And the only reason it works is because the Gadol, who is Omed Al Gabov, the Gadol who's watching over him, he's essentially the bar zvicha. And the Shechita is happening on his behalf. Now, it's an interesting question. Can you call that literally shlichus? Sorry? Technical difficulties of shchita, right? Because of shlichus.
No, but if that's the case, then how can anybody else, like, well, how come an Akum can't do that, even if someone's Omed Al Gabov?
Yeah, it's a good question also, because you're going to say, if we're talking about technical shlichus, so then a katan presumably isn't a bar shlichus either. If you're talking about more loosely used shlichus terminology, then maybe the Akum should also be able to work. But in any event, so the Shach quotes that Levush, and the Shach says, no, you're wrong. He says there's a fundamental difference between a katan and an akum. that are cut, you're not allowed to feed non-kosher meat. And therefore, it's not the same as an akum. So, Sam, I don't know if that's like essentially saying your point. He's saying that you don't have to get into the issue because I don't accept your comparison. Saying that essentially the cotton is a bar zvicha and the akum isn't. So some suggest, you know, the Behuda has a tshuva about this, that it comes from a position of chinuch. The mitzvah of chinuch, that the father, even if you say that Beis Din doesn't have to stop a katan from eating the nevelos, but the father has to train the child. And that presumably should apply to mitzvah saseh also. So that could have been good for the Rambam. But the mitzvah of chinuch is pashtus also a drabbana. Maybe midivrei chabala, because the pasuk says, chanoch lenar al pidarko. So there's a lot of back and forth.
It makes it different from Divrei Kabbalah just because it's in Mishnah?
Sorry? Yeah. So when we have the status of Divrei Kabbalah, we mean that when you have something that's a Pasuk, but the Pasuk is not in Chumash. It's in the Scripture, but it's in Nach. So that's called Divrei Kabbalah. And the status of Divrei Kabbalah is a whole discussion, but it's something a little more than a straight Drabbana. So that the Nedar Behuda was saying that it's from a chinuch perspective. So there's a lot of discussion about the back and forths about this. So what about the fact that this is not going to be a din min haTorah maybe? Or even if it's a din min haTorah, it's not really a mitzvah in the hands of the katan. Even when it comes to chinuch, so we say children are obligated in mitzvos midrabanan. It's a machlokus rishonim whether that's even a theoretical concept. Because if children aren't chayav in mitzvos at all, so we discussed last week's chumash here, right? If you say, let's say like the Rambam, that the source for being obligated in dinim drabanan is lo saser, so okay, but if you're not obligated in mitzvos, you're not obligated in lo saser either. So how can you obligate a katan in mitzvahs, even midrabanan? So some of the Rishonim understand it's not a mitzvah at all on the ketanim, we say chinuch in general. It's a mitzvah on the father to train the children to do mitzvahs. But children are not considered mechuyev at all. And the nature of chinuch, just to say it very briefly, is an interesting discussion what that means. We say a katan is chayiv and mitzvahs midrabanan, is that for training purposes, like the phrase sounds, that we want that when he grows up, he should know what to do and what not to do? Or maybe it's from a different perspective. Maybe it's that if somebody is Jewish, so even if they're not technically obligated, we still don't want them to act like somebody who's not Jewish. So to whatever extent the mitzvahs can be observed, even if there's no technical obligating factor, that should still be there. So that's actually going to affect another part of our Mishnah, because at the same time, the question is also asked, so even if I could explain what the story is with a katan, so what about Cheresh and Shota? Are they in the same category as a katan? Cheresh and Shota are presumably lacking in halachic das, but it's not clear that we should assume that's going to change. So this was a machlokus independently, that if you say that chinuch is about preparing for the future, so some assume, the Trumas Hadeshin, that it only applies to a katan, doesn't apply to a cherish and a shota. And the Chasam Sofer has a tshuva about this. It's very practical, because let's say if somebody needs to be put in an institution and the institution doesn't serve kosher food, so you can't let your child eat non-kosher food, but can somebody who's in the category of a shota katan be fed non-kosher food? So that has very practical implications. But it's relevant here also, because to get the shota of a katan into the category of a kosher l'shchita, we also have to figure out how that works from the bar zvicha perspective. So there are those who say that even if the katan is not obligated, but there's still a reality there that the action of a katan, the way some understand it, there's a Reb Chaim about this, and the Tefuah Shor, and Shechita, and Siman Aleph says this, that a katan is not subject to being regulated and punished, and Schar V'Onesh, but his actions still are what they are, so an action of an Avera is still going to be an action of an Avera done by a katan, even if he's not liable for that Avera. So if he would eat non-kosher food, it would still be a bad thing, even though he's not to be blamed for doing it. And therefore, shechita is still relevant.
Bad in what sense?
I mean, it's hashkafically bad. That the Torah says that, and I think, we discussed a few years ago, we're learning sukkah, that I think we could say that actually the concept of chinuch actually maybe comes off that premise. That essentially what we're saying is that you can understand the ratzon ha-Torah, that if the Torah says, do this action and you'll get schar, and don't do this action or you'll get punished. So when it comes to a katan, the katan is not subject to responsibility, it's not subject to schar v'onesh. So that part is not going to be relevant to him. But logically, you can look and say, okay, the Torah defines this action as good, this action as bad. It makes sense, I should do the good things, I shouldn't do the bad things. So Stifler understands here that eating non-shchuta meat is bad. So for the katan, it's still going to be bad, even though he is not personally obligated. So all of this, these are among the approaches, there's different nuances that you see within them. But it leaves open some questions. So can you be considered a bar zvicha if you're not personally responsible for it? You're not obligated. And can you be considered a bar zvicha if your inclusion here is only in a level midrabana? Logically, that would seem very hard to say. And how could you be a bar zvicha to make your shechita kashra min haTorah when it's only relevant to you because of the din derabana? There's a discussion about this, the Sefer Chavetzelos HaSharon al haTorah. I have it here. And he discusses, he says, on the surface, it seems very difficult to say how that could be. But, he says, maybe it parallels a concept that we've seen discussed here. Because Tosfos, if you recall, Tosfos on Daf Gimel, let's look at it again for a second. Tosfos, the bottom of Daf Gimel Bey is Kasavar. And so, there we see psula kamosh lo dekachavim yizavachta mashata zaveach ata ochel klomar oso shehu bar zvicha lafuke ove kachavim veochel nevelos lahachas. So Tosfos includes somebody who is Jewish but who doesn't care about shechita. So once you say that, if you put that in, how are we defining bar zvicha? Because the one who is ochel nevelos lahachis, he's obligated in shechita. Apparently we're defining it now as obligated and you care about it, or you care about it. So the Chavetzelos HaSharon mentions it could be then that's the inverse, that if you're going to say that if somebody's technically obligated but they don't care about it, they're not a bar zvicha, then the inverse might be if somebody's not obligated, but they do care about it, then they are a bar zvicha. So then, if you're obligated midrabanan, then you do care about it. If we're defining it as that you halachically care about it, so then maybe that allows us to expand who's in the same time as it also expands who's out. In other words, if we're going to throw out the momer lahachis, we can bring in the one who's only chayiv midrabanan. So, to summarize all this, I think what you might have here is, and to plug this into how we understood the mitzvah of shechita, so for example, you recall we discussed the Ahalevi, that how could you say that shechita is about Tzar Balei Chaim, why don't we say then that whenever you kill an animal, it has to be with these rules? And we discussed in the Hashkafic discussion that it's not so crazy, because it could be that it's connected to the whole delicate balance of the Heter Achilas Basar, that will let you eat meat and kill animals. But you have to appreciate then that if you're going to kill meat for that kill animals for that purpose, then there needs to be an extra sensitivity to the consequences, which isn't always going to be required, but it's tied in with the notion of our very mixed attitude towards eating meat in the first place. So perhaps we could say here that the concept of Bar Zvicha, for your shechita to have a status of a effective shechita, doesn't have to come from your being mitzvah to do that. That far we don't have to go. But it has to have some connection to the statement of last week's parsha, 2 weeks ago parsha now, that meat can only be eaten with shechita. So if that relationship is relevant to you, so then that makes you part of the concept of shechita. But if it's completely irrelevant to you because there is no notion that you need to sheft in order to eat, so then that's not a part of the parsha of shechita. Does that make sense? So now let's try to plug that back into the kshira issue. So do these answers help us relate to why a katan is not called a bar kshira if he's called a bar zvicha? Yeah.
How does that then? How do we then deal with Akum if we're concluding on, maybe not concluding on, but ending on saying that if you have like relevance to?
So the Akum has no relevance to it. He is allowed to eat meat without this.
What about? I mean,
on every level, Minotaurah, Midrabanan,
which I guess is inherently different than Kusi.
Right. Though Kusi, we'll see, gets a little complicated. But Kusi is sometimes thrown in the same category, so holding off with Kusi.
But then, in a sense, you do need some sort of chiyuv, like even if it's Darabana.
Or, yes, but it doesn't have to be directed at you. Right? It doesn't have to be Minotaurah, it doesn't have to be directed at you. You don't have to be the person who is responsible for it. Doesn't necessarily have to formulate itself as a mitzvah to you. But it means that the idea that meat cannot be eaten without shechita is relevant to you.
What if Akum thinks that's relevant to them?
But it has to actually be relevant to him, okay. Because there's nothing stopping him from eating meat that wasn't shechita.
Okay.
All right, so it seems like that's going to change. Now, the truth is, maybe there's what to explore about that, because the fact that the Rambam does think that could have been conceptually true.
Right.
Now, it's because he denies the whole concept of a bar zvicha, apparently. But that's itself relevant. You know, the fact that you don't need a bar zvicha, according to the Rambam, you know, essentially saying that the mitzvah doesn't have such a concept that it has to actually affect you personally. So there is some room to consider that. So let's see, do these answers work for the chiluk between shechita and kshira, or do you have to say more? What do you think? So why is it then we'll say, okay, so the katan is a bar zvicha, but he's not a bar kshira? Of anything we've said so far, does it help with that question? Yeah, lady?
There's chinuch for zvicha, but not really for kshira, except maybe the last month.
Okay, so that's actually interesting. The question of chinuch for tefillin, how it plays out, so you're saying the last month, it's actually an interesting, you know, there are different minhagim as to when we put on tefillin for a pre-bar mitzvah, although there also it's unique because there is this extra concern about not being able to treat the tefillin properly. So on the surface, you should say, really, if you look at it from the chinuch perspective, if chinuch is the factor, so it should be the same. And you should say that, okay, that there's chinuch by shchita, there's chinuch by tefillin. So let's let a katan who is higia l'chinuch write tefillin also. So the truth is, the Rebbe Behuda writes that he thinks that's true. And there's a little bit of a red herring, what we said, that when it comes to tefillin, we don't let the katan be involved at any age. And I told you that story about picking up my son's tefillin like a month before he was bar mitzvah. And they wouldn't let him participate in finishing it off because of that, correctly. But that's based on a Mordechai. A Mordechai says that even if the katan is higia l'chinuch, he's still not considered to be a bar kshira. But the Noda Behuda actually challenges this. He thinks he doesn't know why that should be. He thinks maybe chinuch is enough to make you a part of the concept. And then it could be true for both. It could be true, maybe this whole distinction is a red herring, according to him. And that really, if the details line up, a bar zvicha and a bar kshira would be treated the same. But others do assume there is a distinction. So how could we explain the distinction? So one way to explain it is to say that it's about los aseis and aseis, which is not what the Noda Behuda says, but what others say. So if we say that we have to be mafresh or cutting from Isser, but we don't necessarily have the same level, at least not a Torah obligation, of positive mitzvos, so that could be the distinction. That they're obligated not to eat non-shechted meat, but they're not actually obligated in an equivalent way to put on tefillin. Is there any other distinction you could think of between tefillin and shchuta here? Well, what's different besides this in terms of the mitzvah of those two mitzvahs, shchita and tefillin? What else distinguishes them? We go back to our first day. Tefillin's a chiyuv. Right? Shchita is not a chiyuv. So there are a number of achronim. Reb Chaim Ozer and the Achiezer. And Reb Chaim Brisker. The Pri Yitzchak, Reb Yitzchak Blazer has an approach like this. That maybe you should say a katan is different than an akum. Because an Akum is not going to be subject to Shechita ever, unless he converts. But a Katan ultimately will, so he's in the Parsha of Shechita, because it will be obligatory on him. But then you can say, alright, but then what about Tefillin? Tefillin, he's also in the Parsha. So a number of Achronim say, like Yossi says, that no, Tefillin is a Chiyuv. So therefore, we need somebody who's chayiv now. Your future chiyuv is not enough. But when it comes to shchita, shchita is not a chiyuv in the first place. So a more floating obligation, the idea that you may ultimately, you will, God willing, ultimately be subject to the mitzvah, that's enough. Is that a compelling distinction? Well, that, so that should make it even more limited, you're saying?
Yeah.
Interesting. So I'll tell you, Reb Chaim Ozer and the Achiezer, he says something which connects to that, meaning that they all come from the same reason. Why is Tzolena Mitzvah Seisha as a monogramma? What makes it monogramma? You don't do it on Shabbos, and you don't do it at night. But that's not obvious that that should be a mitzvah seisha as monogramma. There's a kasha, the Svarim all talk about, that the Rambam writes that men and women are both obligated in the mitzvah of binyan beis hamikdash. So there, the Gemara says, you can't build a beis hamikdash on Shabbos, and you can't build a beis hamikdash at night. So those are the exact same blackout zones as tefillin. So if tefillin is a mitzvah seisha as monogramma, how come building the Beis HaMikdash isn't? So some explain the Minchas Elazar has a tshuva where he mentions this approach, that it's still different, that when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, it's not really tied into any time. It's an ongoing project, and there are times when it's on pause. It's not stopped, it's on pause. So you won't continue the project at night or on Shabbos, but after Shabbos and the nighttime pass, then you pick up with the same mitzvah. But why is tefillin different? Because today is Monday, so you have a mitzvah to wear tefillin on Monday. Tonight's going to come, and the mitzvah's going to stop. So when it picks up again tomorrow, that's a new chiyuv. So the mitzvah of wearing tefillin on Monday is actually completely contained only within the daytime hours of Monday. And then it's over, and then tomorrow is another mitzvah. So Reb Chaim Moser says that, so I don't know if that's what you're getting at, Yassi, but he says that tefillin, even if he's going to be a gadol later on, by then it's going to be a different mitzvah. He's not chayiv today. But shechita, theoretically, if you would shech the animal today and put it in the freezer and come back and have it as his bar mitzvah party, so it's going to be relevant to him. So the fact that he's not chayiv right now, theoretically, the shechted status of this animal could impact him as an adult. Well, is it true? Which part of it?
If a katan shechts it and then puts it in the freezer.
Well, if a katan shechts it in the way that the Mishnah says is okay,
right?
So then, yeah, he could eat it that day, but he could. But also on his bar mitzvah, he could eat it. So upon his bar mitzvah, he's going to be subject to the actual dinim. So right now, when he's 12 and a half, let's say, I don't know how they didn't have any freezers then, but let's how much time we want to put in the freezer. Let's say when he's 12 and three quarters. So this meat, it's going to impact him if it's shechted or not. But when it comes to tefillin, his suggestion is that that's not going to be the same. So those are some of the distinctions that are suggested to distinguish between tefillin, where we say he's not a bar kshira, and shechita, where we say that he is a bar zvicha. So just to recap those suggestions, what were they? That maybe according to Noda Bihu, there really shouldn't be a difference. It's all about chinuch. If you're megia l'chinuch, then both should work. If not, then neither should work. Or you could distinguish between a mitzvah saseh and a lo saseh. Or you could distinguish between a mitzvah chiyuvis and a non-chiyuvis mitzvah. Or you could distinguish between a mitzvah that will possibly be relevant to you someday, even after you become bar mitzvah, where shechita maybe could do that, but tefillin can't, because the mitzvah of tefillin is tied into every day, and by the time you're an adult, it's going to be a different day. Okay, so far so good? Everything makes sense? So let's consider the following question. This is a major topic, halacha l'maisa. And so this, the additional sources that I sent out towards the end of Seder touch upon this. I don't know if anyone had a chance to see them yet or not. But we'll just sketch it out a little bit, and then maybe we'll overflow a little bit in tomorrow to give you a chance to see a little bit more. But what if you have a katan and a gadol holding on to the knife together and shechting? So that already we know should be good, because gadol omed al gabo. But let's now parallel it to the two different directions we were asking. What if you have a katan and a gadol holding the quill together and they're writing tefillin? Is that good? No? Why do you say no? It's going to look funny in the handwriting. But besides that, so why do you say no?
Because I know, but in regards to Sefer Torah, we can Mm-hmm. But I know the Sefer Torah is different. I don't remember the exact details.
Okay, so you're saying there's something out there that has to do with, let's say logically, so let's not bring in any outside knowledge, but logically speaking, if you have a Kohen and a Gadol writing Tefillin together, is that going to be effective?
No, it seems like it would be effective by Shechita just because we're results oriented, but there's something different by Tefillin.
You're saying Shechita is better? Tefillin, you think not?
There's something else going on.
That's
the same reason we have a discrepancy between
Bar Zvicha
and
Bar
Kashir in the first place.
Okay.
You can argue that writing the letters on the cloth is also result oriented. It needs to be done properly.
Okay, but you're saying, but it has a focus on.
You have to have, like, I guess, proper. I don't really know the laws of that, but I'm assuming you have to have, like, some sort of proper kibbutz.
Yeah.
So the letters do need to be.
But presumably everything has details that are important. The question is it only those details,
right,
or is there something in the process? Yossi?
I mean, it just depends on how we view the katan here. Is he detracting from the gadol's action, or is he just not keely, like he's not there at all even?
Okay, so presumably, right, that's going to be a big fact. That's going to be the key factor. Right, some more, you want to say something about that?
I was just also thinking about maybe Das.
Right, so how does Das play into it, though? So what would you do with that?
The Katan might not have Das. I mean, is the Katan able to piggyback on the Das of the Gadol?
Well, does he need to piggyback, or maybe the Gadol's Das by itself is there? So now let's also, you know, our two axes here, Kshira and Shechita and Katan and Akum. So let's flip the question onto the other axis. If you have a Jew and an Akum holding the knife together, is that a valid Shechita?
Not for the Rambam.
Ah. Okay, so you think for the Rambam it shouldn't be. You're saying that because you saw the Rambam, you're saying that because you think logically.
Because the Avodah Zarah is there. The
Rambam, okay. So what about the others? What would you say?
I mean, it goes back into, even if we just say that Bar Zvicha is okay, is half Bar Zvicha okay? I mean, what's the gradient of how okay it is?
Okay, so that's itself an important question. But let's go back to the Tosefta. Right? Remember that same Tosefta, which seems to be the basis for Tosus and the Rush. So let's pick up from where we left off. It's all for the first halacha and the Tosefta in Parak Aleph. So right after where he says, all those are no good. Yisrael shoshachat, if you have a Jew who shechted, and then the Oved Kachavim came and finished off the shechita. Shechitas of psula. Shachar bashnayim, or rov shnayim, shechitas of kshera. Oved Kachavim shoshachat, Amerik Yisrael, shechita yadav, shechita kshera. Shachar b'adavar she'enu also so treifa v'yisrael b'avagomer v'shachted a little bit that wouldn't make it die, and then a Jew came and finished it mutaris b'achila yisrael v'ovik kachavim. Here, the last line is the ikker here. Yisrael v'ovik kachavim shayu ochsin b'sakin. They're holding a knife together. V'shochten afilu echa l'mayla v'echa l'mata. Last words here. Shchitasan kishera. So here the Tosefta says that if they shech together, it's good. So, what does this reflect, and does the Rambam agree with this? So if you look in the Shulchan Aruch actually says that if they shech together, it's no good. And the Shach discusses, what about the Tosefta? And the Shach makes the chiluk. So what chiluk do you think he would make? Well,
I mean,
we could actually talk about l'chachila or b'di'evet. But the distinction he makes is, yeah?
That's a chashash, or lack of chashash. There's like two distinctions he made.
Okay.
Well,
his basic point is that maybe what we're talking about when we say it's no good, maybe we mean if the Akum had intentions for Avodah Zarah, then it doesn't help that the Jew is shechting with him. So what's the Tosafta talking about? A Stam who doesn't have any idolatrous intentions. So what emerges from this? If that distinction is correct, what he's saying is that essentially, to be consistent with the Tosafta, as he's trying to do, saying that in general, an Akum is just a lack of Hechsher. It's not a Bar Zvicha. So if the Jew does it together with him, so then it can be Bar Zvichified by the Jew's involvement, and that could be good. But if he's actively thinking for Avodah Zarah, that's a disqualification. And then it's not going to help that the Jew is involved. Now, what's interesting is, if you look in the Rambam, maybe you'll get a chance to see tomorrow, the Rambam, where he brings this, is in Perek Dalet Halacha Yud Gimel of Hilcha Shechita. The Rambam says, it's no good. Now we can understand that, L'shitaso, right? And that's what Mori said, right, before seeing it, which is logically, that the Rambam L'shitaso, that essentially it is no good, and therefore it doesn't help that he's doing it together with the Jew. Because he brings a disqualification. So what about the Tosefta? So if you look in the Magid Mishnah there, the Magid Mishnah says this Tosefta is not Kehilchasa. This is, we don't paskin like this. But it's certainly consistent with what we've seen so far, that the Rambam's approach is at odds with the Tosefta. So therefore, it's not surprising that he may come to a different perspective on this. So their klal on this issue of the joint action, for the most part, should be pretty intuitive. Right? If you say that two people doing an action together, one who is qualified and one who is disqualified, so is that action effective? So what's the klal? It depends. What's wrong with the other guy? If the other guy is just not enough, he's not a bar zvicha, or he's not a bar kshira, so then the presence of the one who is obligated will fix things. But if the other guy is actively problematic, so then the presence of the Jew is not going to help. The presence of the Mechuyev is not going to help. So it's a pretty intuitive distinction, I think. And some of you alluded to it before. It's discussed in a tshuva by Rav Nosson Gestetner. We mentioned him last week. He had that very elegant approach to the Rambam and Tosfos as far as how they relate to whether it's Shechita as a mitzvah or not, and how that should affect whether they see a katan as a bar zvicha or not, if you recall. Then I was quoting from his Sefer in Chulin. His Sefer Nosson Piryu in Chulin, he made that connection. But you can also see it in this tshuva. He mentions, in this tshuva, he mentions the same point. He explains the Rambam L'shitaso against Tosfos. If you want to look it up, you can find it on HebrewBooks.org. It's worth reading. And maybe if you have time tomorrow as you look into the Mor Makoros, it wouldn't be the worst idea to track it down. So it's in Shalos and Chuvas Lahoros Nasan, Chelik Aleph, Simon Dalet. So there he essentially discusses this principle. The starting point of his question is, he's asking about the kshira. If you have a katan and a gadol writing tefillin together in the same hand, the same pen, so is that good? So he assumes that the operative principle is that if the one who's not good is only missing something, so then when you join it together with a mechuyev bedaver, it's going to be a good product. But if the one who's not good is actively bringing a problem with him, So then partnering up with a mechuyev is not going to help. So using that premise, what conclusions do you come to? That for the kshira question, presumably should it be good or not for a katan and a gadol to be writing tefillin together?
It's a yes, then.
It's a yes, it should be good, right? And that's what he assumes, that the only issue of a katan is he's not something, he's not a bar kshira. So if he's writing together with a gadol, it's okay, it's written by a bar kshira. But by shechita, if we're talking about a Jew and a non-Jew, if they shech together, is that good or is that no good?
It's not good.
Sorry?
I would think, I guess, not good.
Well, maybe it would be totally, right? So it depends on what you hold about shechita zakum. So like Maury said before, according to the Rambam, it's going to be no good because the Rambam holds that shechita zakum is a problem. But according to those who say that Shechita Zakum is missing something, he's not a Bar Zvicha, so then it would be good, as long as there's no additional active Avodah Zarah going on. So that would explain the Tosefta, and presumably the Rambam and the Rashi and Tosfos would agree that having a Gadol present is going to be effective. Having a Jew in this case, a present, is going to be effective. So there's a little bit more to say about that, but maybe we'll leave that for tomorrow to give you a chance to see a little bit more of it inside. So we'll just quickly recap what we spoke about today, because we spoke about quite a bit. So just to go in order, we talked about the highlighting what are the dinim here related to a Shechita Zakum, because we also talked about the Machlokas, the Rambam, and the Ravid about Tuma. So just to recap those three dinim again, that there's a din that the Shechita Zakum is no good and can't be eaten from. That's an Isser Daraisa, according to everybody. And the reason is, according to the Tosefta, the Rush, and the Tosus, because he's not a Bar Zvicha, so the Shechita is nothing. And according to the Rambam, because the Torah has this pasuk saying it's bad if he invites you to eat from his shechita. The next din was that applies even if he's not an Oved Avodah Zarah. According to the Russian Tosfos, of course, because he's still not a Bar Zvicha. But according to the Rambam, he calls it a Geder, because it doesn't really follow the logic. The Geder is probably a din minat Torah, and we talked about how you could have a Siag minat Torah. Might be Drabbanah. And then there was the question of the tuma that comes with this nevela, the tuma that comes with this apparent nevela of a shechita zakum. So according to the Rush and the Tosfos, and now the Ravid who chimes in on this point, we see that that's because it's nothing, it's a nevela. So just like a nevela is metame, so shechita zakum is metame min haTorah. But the Rambam holds that it might be drabbanan karuv be'enai to say it's midivrei sofra, because the Rambam will hold that the Shechita of an Akum could have been something, but the Torah specifically said you're not allowed to eat from it. So all we know is you can't eat from it, but a treif also you can't eat. It's not necessarily a metame if it was shechted. So too, Shechita Akum, you can't eat from it, but Tuma isn't necessarily a consequence of that. So we know that there is Tuma, but that might be Drabbanan. That was the first part of what we spoke about. Then we spoke about the idea that the other Rishonim, other than the Rambam, would have is a requirement of a Bar Zvicha. So how could it be that a Katan is apparently a Bar Zvicha because he's kosher to Shecht under the right circumstances, and an Akum is not? What's the difference? And especially in light of the fact that a Katan is not considered to be a Bar Kshira for the purposes of writing Tefillin. So as far as distinguishing between an Akum, we mentioned a few approaches. We mentioned the Levush, who said that actually he's not a Bar Zvicha, and it only works because the Gadol's intent is what defines things here. And the Shach says, no, what are you talking about? There's a fundamental difference between an Akum and a Katan, because a Katan's also not allowed to eat unshechted meat. So we talked about that question, is that enough? If this Isher of eating non-shafted meat, what if it's not relevant to the katan, it's relevant to the parent, the katan's still not obligated to mitzvos, and what if it's only the rabbanan? Is it possible to have a status of a bar zvicha d'oraisa based on a concern which is the rabbanan? We mentioned how the Chavetz Chaim said maybe, because maybe it's the parallel of Tosfos saying that the mamar l'hachis is out of it. So if we're going to define it by whether you personally care about the shechita, not just whether it's a mitzvah, so then if you care about it for halachic reason, even if that reason is drabanan, so that should be considered caring about it. So we went through some of these questions, and what we basically wanted to say was that just like we saw that in response to the Ahalevi's question last week, that the concept of shechita is particularly meaningful because it's connected to the Torah saying you can only eat meat under these circumstances. So shechita is only called shechita when it's being performed from that concern that without this, the meat is prohibited to me. Not necessarily that it's a mitzvah, but that the meat is prohibited without the shechita. That mentality has to be a part of the shechita. But that might still be different than kshira. So what about kshira? So we mentioned about four approaches to distinguish between them. The Rav Behuda says there isn't really a distinction, that's all a red herring, and that it all comes down to chinuch, and if you're up to the stage of chinuch, you should be both a bar zvicha and a bar kshira, and if not, then not, arguing on the Mordechai and others, and presumably halacha l'maisa, that says we assume up until bar mitzvah you're not considered to be a bar kshira. Others who distinguish between a lo saseh and aseh, and others who distinguish between a mitzvah chiyuvis and a mitzvah kiyumis. A mitzvah chiyuvis, you have to be chayiv right now. A mitzvah kiyumis, you can be chayiv later. That's enough to make you in the parasha. And as Reb Chaim Lozer added, that you're not irrelevant because if you're 12 and a half years old and you shecht meat and you put it in the freezer, then that's going to impact on you when you become bar mitzvah. But if you write tefillin, it's not going to be relevant to you because by the time you bar mitzvah, it's a different day. Okay, so far so good. Got a lot done today. So we move into the next subject, which we're going to continue a little bit tomorrow. The question of what about a joint act? So if you have somebody shechting together with a non-Jew, would that work? So we know that as far as a katan and a gadol shechting, that does work, because that's no less than gadol omid al gabav. It's even better. But what about the two different contradictions we were asking about today? So what if you have a katan and a gadol writing tefillin together, and you have a katan, or you have an adult Jew and a akum shechting together? So presumably, the intuitive principle should be that what's the problem? If the problem is you're just not qualified enough, so then the presence of a qualified party should make it good. But if you're bringing an active problem, so then it doesn't matter who else you're doing it with, it's still an active problem. And so how does that address the question here? So when it comes to tefillin, bar kshira, so clearly there's no problem the katan brings. He's just not qualified. He's not a bar kshira. But if the adult is a bar kshira, that should do it. And when it comes to shechita of a Jew and a non-Jew, so it depends how you relate to the issue of shechita sakum. If it's an active problem, so then it shouldn't help. And that's indeed the position of the Rambam, that it doesn't help. But if it's about not being a bar zvicha, so then it could help. And that's the position of the Tosefta, that indeed it could work under those circumstances. And the Shulchan Aruch says that it doesn't work, but the Shach explains it depends what we're talking about. That if there were intentions for Avodah Zarah, so that's an active thing, and then it's not going to help. But if it was a Stam, just a non-Jew, wasn't it doing it all for Avodah Zarah, so that's what the Tosefta was saying, that it could work under those circumstances. But the Rambam, neither way is it going to work. And the Magen Mishnah says, the Rambam doesn't pass like the Tosefta, indeed they're working off of different premises. And we'll pick up, we'll say a few more words about that partnership tomorrow. All right, so we got a lot done today, so hopefully we'll just...